Thank you, Steve. Last time it was Thanksgiving dinner at that Brooklyn Marriott Hotel. At least that's where it was. I had it.
Yeah, that's where I had it. Yep, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly where you had it.
Good memory, but always great to talk hoop with you, and excited to be on today.
So the other night, I couldn't wait to watch Illinois play Michigan. We know how it turned out. But before that, I said, man, I'm going to watch West Virginia play Baylor. That felt like high-level hoops at 20 paces, Fran. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, it was a great game. Of course, when you're in a league like the Big Ten or the Big 12 this year particularly, Steve, there are going to be a number of memorable games. But given what was at stake for Baylor, the absolute mystery of when they were going to be the team that who we've seen for 17 games prior to the three-week COVID break, it had the drama. It had, obviously, Huggs' team is playing great. And Baylor was trying to get a conference championship, if you could believe this, for the first time in 71 years.
Yeah.
And to your point, we had great shot-making. Those are two really quality teams. And you've seen it all year in the Big Ten. We're seeing it in the Big 12, some really good basketball.
My experience, loosely with COVID and with teams has been, I've kind of looked at it like a player coming back from an injury. They usually have adrenaline the first game, then the second game they've got nothing, then the third game they settle in. Is that what we're probably seeing with Baylor right now?
Well, I'll tell you, I wish I could give you an answer, because I don't know about you, but I have never lived through a once-a-century pandemic.
I missed out on the Spanish flu. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I talked to Coach Drew before his after his Kansas game and before the West Virginia game. I know that program well. I was so anxious to watch them the other night just because nobody really knows, and I don't even think they're back all the way. I think they just gritted out it's who they are in terms of their character, that they won that kind of game in overtime, and they obviously had some great shot making. And I think they're going to be back to where they were by the time they get to Kansas City next week. But quite frankly, and this is Baylor, this is, the way I've put it, and I don't know how you feel about this, there's two kinds of breaks this year. There's the COVID pause when your team has the virus, and then there's the COVID break when somebody else has it and your games are canceled, or maybe in the case of Michigan, where the state shut down Michigan athletics, and I'm not sure that they didn't have to stop practicing. So every COVID situation is different. And particularly because of HIPAA laws and the privacy of the athletes, I'm not sure we know the whole story sometimes when these kids are out of action. So to me, it's still a complete mystery when these kids get, hit with when you see teams having the pause and kids sitting out.
Recently, Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State had a 40-point game, which received a lot of publicity, and justifiably so.
Yeah.
But if you look at his numbers, it seems to me like he's the type of player, friend, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this.
Yeah.
He seems to do what's necessary in a game to win the game, and it doesn't matter to him how many shots he takes. Am I right about that?
Totally on the money. There have been times this season, especially earlier in this 1 year he's going to be with us, where I said, hey, I love this kid, but I wish he'd take over the game a little bit earlier, because they lost a couple they started out 1-3, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. In an 82-game season next year, you can do this, especially with great players. But no, he really, really is a great teammate. And the impressive thing about him is we knew he was a 6'8" playmaker. We knew he has this, the kind of size that can push people around. But he's become, or at least in college, he's been a great outside shooter. I think the sky's the limit for him at the NBA level. And trying to think of, I don't know if there's a comparison. I've heard Doncic, Grant Hill, Penny Hardaway. I'm not sure who he is, but what I do think he is going to be a very effective player in the NBA, because he's going to be around great players. To your point, Steve, he makes the guys around him even better.
Well, it's interesting, Fran, because Penn State was supposed to be in that Charleston tournament with Oklahoma State. I was really anxious to watch him play. It kind of got, I know, you've had to do things in studio. I've had to do some road games in studio. How valuable, though, is it for you to not only watch the video, because the quote video doesn't lie, but then to actually see somebody in person?
Well, as a matter of fact, the lovely Mrs. Freshella and I are in Dallas, Texas right now, driving down to Waco because I'm going to watch Baylor play Oklahoma State tonight, in part because of your point. I've been celebrating college basketball from my home. If you listen to me broadcast, I hope you'll say, boy, he brings the same energy no matter where he is. I've tried to do that. But we're going to have a busman's holiday tonight and stop at Cracker Barrel somewhere along the way. and then I'm going to go out fancy dinner, right? And then I'm going to go watch Baylor play Oklahoma State. Now, to do some homework for next week, because we are going to be in Kansas City in person, to see Cade Cunningham again in person, to see Baylor again, and to celebrate Scott Drew's great season, because he's, like many of these coaches, he's a close friend, and it's good to get out of the house. But that's what we're going to do tonight. To your point, I want to see these guys in person.
By the way, tell the lovely Mrs. Freshella we appreciate that she's sharing you with us right now, so I appreciate
that. She's driving. She's doing the driving. All is good. All is good.
All is good. I want to ask you a big picture question for a moment, because you do a lot of work where you're able to identify guys that can play at the next level. Let's face it, there in the Big Ten, there are a lot of great big guys. Kofi Coburn, that's like a wall. Obviously, Hunter Dickinson, Luka Garza, you know, Travion Williams. Those guys, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, probably were lottery picks. They're not lottery picks now. What is it about the college game where their game translates to the college level, but the pros don't think it translates to their level?
Well, I think that's starting to cycle back a little bit. Now, obviously, we've been around, you know, I'll put it this way, Steve. When I was a young coach, and even before that, when I started following basketball, when you watched a good high school team that had four guards and one linebacker who was out playing center because he was just trying to stay in shape, we didn't call that small ball. The high school coach put the best guys on the court. When I was at Manhattan College, my power forward for 4 years was a kid from DeMatha High School who was 6'3", 250. He was a power forward. He could play inside. Yeah. And so many of us have been playing small ball forever. Well, the game in the NBA has gone positionless, as we know. But I do think it's cycling back. And to your point, somehow those kids you mentioned, including Luka Garza, and especially because teams now carry 17 guys on the roster, those guys are all going to play in the NBA. And then their coach is going to have to figure out how to use a guy like that. Now, we had the great fortune of watching Doka Azubuike for 4 years at Kansas, and he ended up being a first-round pick when people said he was a dinosaur. And so I do think those kids all will have a place in the league. The game has changed. It is more positionless, and teams do tend to go a little bit smaller. But, I mean, you still see Marc Gasol playing and guys like that. If you gave me time, Yusef Nurkic, Jokic, for example, who's 7'1". I mean, there's a place for these guys, and it's just got to be the right team, right coach, who's going to figure out how to use them, and then, quite frankly, protect them in some defensive schemes. Pick and roll, for example, where teams will try to make your big guy play out on the floor.
Obviously, I've been watching the Big Ten on a regular basis because that's what I'm broadcasting. You broadcast, obviously, a lot of Big 12. What's the depth of the Big 12 like? How wide open do you think that tournament in Kansas City can be next week?
Oh, you know, seven teams. This is a unique year because those two leagues are going to send, at minimum, it looks like right now, 16 teams to the NCAAs. There are some years in the Big 12, and you probably agree in the Big 10 as well, where, six or seven teams are in the Big 12's case, you know, seven or eight or nine will go. But the last three are high seeds, you know, a nine seed, a 10 seed, or 11 seed.
Right.
I know in this league this year, every one of those teams, like, it's crazy to think about this, but Texas could be the seventh-place team in this league. And only a few short weeks ago, not only had won the Maui Invitational, but also was the number four team in the country. Now, they hit a COVID pause, so they're not quite the same, but it's insane to think, like you've seen in the Big 10 before, that a seventh-place team is actually going to have to play a play-in game, even though they're automatically going to the NCAA tournament. So this particular year, especially with Baylor being knocked off a little bit with the COVID virus, I absolutely think it's a year where all seven teams that are heading to the NCAA tournament, any one of those teams with some breaks here and there can win the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City next week.
There was one oddity, I want to say three and a half weeks ago, where Kentucky was 10th in the SEC, Duke was 10th in the ACC, Michigan State was 10th in the Big Ten. And then there was Kansas, which fell out of the top 25 at one point. Okay, Kansas obviously had that game with Baylor, right? Played really well. Where are they right now, Fran?
It's probably the least talented team in Bill's 18 years, but they're still capable of being a four seed. And and they've resurrected what looked to be a season heading nowhere. Now, the schedule fell in their favor. As you know, Steve, at the start of every season, you look at the schedule and you see, like, okay, we got to get through this part. This is going to be rough. Well, with some COVID postponements, they hit a stretch where they won five in a row, lost at Texas in a close game, and they came back and beat Baylor. Dangerous. They got a great coach. They have a good team with good players. I'd say they're a top 15, you know, top four seed line team. But by no means are they the Texas team we're used to seeing year in and year out in the Big 12. But still a quality team.
All right, you're obviously I think of you as one of the top broadcasters in on television doing the game, because to me one of the keys in broadcasting for the analyst is that when the game's over, do I know more not just about the game I'm watching, but about the game? And you do that.
What do you
know now with everything? I don't care whether it's the coaching part, the politics part, that you wish you knew when you were coaching.
Oh, well, without a doubt, I wish I knew more about the politics of the business, of being able to, you have to your relationships with your players, you have to manage up as well as manage down. I was a young coach. I didn't play for Coach K. I couldn't pick up the phone and call Roy Williams. And I had, you know, obviously I did work for Danny Nee and Gary Williams and Rick Barnes, three good coaches, but I didn't have a board of directors where I could call somebody who I was really close to and say, "Hey, I'm about to interview for this job. Should I do it?" For example.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things I tell young coaches all the time is, because having success is hard. It really is, as you know. But when you do have success, you have to manage, you know, you have to manage your situation, and you have to have people in your corner that you can pick up the phone and call when a decision has to be made that your staff can't really help you with, because oftentimes they're in the same forest with you. And so, you know, that old story about you can't see the forest, you know, through the trees,
it's very
similar. So, yeah, I think that part, and I'm a way better basketball coach now as far as knowing the game than I
right.
was
exactly,
because I've
right.
coached 1,000 games and I haven't lost any,
right? So I was telling everybody,
it's been fun.
I am one of them. But you know it's interesting about that, because you talk about the ability to talk to other coaches. Look, this is a profession that, unless you're sitting in that chair as the quote CEO,
they're the
only other people that can relate to you. Is that fair?
Well, it's fair. I have some great friends who are in, you know, in journalism, who know the game as well as many coaches. You know, Mike DeCourcy comes to mind. You know,
Mike's great.
You know,
Mike's great.
Mike's a wonderful guy. We've been friends for 30 plus years. So I'm not going to go the Coach Boeheim route like he did yesterday, and poo-poo somebody's journalistic chops. But as an analyst on a game, what I try to do is I try to enlighten people as to why the coach is thinking the way he is, and based a lot of it on my own experience or my experience of studying these guys and saying, hey, this is a – like, for example, when there's a timeout, Steve, in a Kansas game and Kansas has the ball, you better pay attention, because Bill Self's going to run a play and get themselves an easy basket.
That's right.
And you know that over time. Oliver Purnell used to change a defense – every single time out. If they were playing zone, he'd come out man. And so those are the little nuances you pick up as a coach that you share with the viewer. And the other thing I learned a long time ago, because I learned it before broadcasting, and that was keep the game simple. And when you explain it, I had some players who weren't the sharpest tacks in the box.
Right.
I don't want to say they were dumb. That's politically incorrect. But I had to take my time teaching them a little bit more, or explain it a little bit better. And that's exactly how I treat a broadcast. I try not to talk over anybody's head. I try to explain something so that the average basketball fan could say, boy, that was cool. I never heard it explained that way before. And it just goes back to my philosophy of coaching, keep it simple, stupid.
Right, that's exactly right. For example, you're doing a Michigan State game. I mean, and we'll talk about it on our broadcast. You know when an out-of-bounds, baseline out-of-bounds, sideline out-of-bounds. You know Tom Izzo has a thick notebook that he's going to go to. He's running a play to score. I mean,
exactly.
You have to know stuff like that beforehand.
Well, and some of it's osmosis, I have to tell you. Some of it is just through the years watching so much basketball or watching so much at Kansas or so much at whoever it might be or coaching against guys and saying, hey, he still does this. You know, he's tricky. Watch this. And so, you know, the other night we had a game where it was a five-point game. Barrel was up, and I said, hey, I take the short two here instead of finding the three. But Bob Huggins has always wanted that three ball in that situation. And, you know, he's going to the Hall of Fame this year probably. But he wasted 15 of the 25 seconds looking for a three.
Yeah.
And you know it. And he's still going to win 900 games here in the next couple of games. So what do I know?
You know a lot. Great, great respect and admiration for the work you do. I thank you so much for the time you gave us today. The audience was richer for it.
Thank you. And please send my best to Coach Ferry. I know he's on your show tonight. And send him my best. He's a good man.
Yes. Thanks so much, Fran. I will. Appreciate it.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.